I'm Leonard Lopate. This is WNYC 93.9, AM 820. We're online at WNYC.org. In 1973, the funk group Tower of Power sang, "Hipness is what it is, and sometimes hipness is what it ain't." Well, even today, the cultural phenomenon of hipness has continued to be difficult to define, but everyone agrees hip has traditionally operated in the margins of society, among its outcasts and outlaws, musicians, poets, painters, blacks and Jews, gangsters and gangstas, and free thinkers. Now, New York Times writer John Leland has taken a look at the archetypes, facilitators, and activists associated with hip, and given us a history of what he calls an American cultural phenomenon. His book, Hip, A History, is published by HarperCollins, and I'm very pleased that it has brought John Leland to my show today. Hello.
Good morning. Thanks.
When I Googled hip, I got a list of orthopedic surgeons. So how do you research something like this if no one agrees exactly what it is, and Google has no idea that it even exists?
Well, it's possible that you're selling the orthopedic surgeons short. They could be cool jasmine in their spare time. But what I did is I begin with the origins of the word. To the best we can tell, it seems to come from West Africa, from a Wolof word, hippie or heppy, meaning to see or to open your eyes. So we look at it as a kind of enlightenment or awareness, and a specific one. What kind of enlightenment would make sense to the slaves from West Africa, and what happens to that as it gets turned into hip?
So when people say, "I'm hip to that," or they used to say sometimes, "I'm hep to that," they're really saying, "I see."
Right.
So I understand it maybe in a little deeper than just "I know."
Yes, and it begins as a verb, not as a hip hotels or hip shoes or hip neighborhood.
So then there's a kind of a sense like I'm part of the in crowd as well because I know things that other people might not know?
Yes, or things that I'm not supposed to know.
Mm-hmm. And when it came here from Africa with slaves, then that might have even taken on another level because I'm hip would mean that I know things that the slave master doesn't know.
Right. What do I have? I don't have money because I don't have money. And I don't have political power because I don't have that. You know, what gives me freedom and autonomy? It's knowledge. It's awareness. So it's an important thing for negotiating their new world.
And I guess it spread because Wolof was not the only language that was spoken by American slaves. It's one of the major languages. I think it's the major language of Senegal, but slaves came from all over West Africa.
Right. They were speaking Wolof in Senegal and Western Gambia. But English is what turned the slaves from various types of various African nations who spoke many different languages. You know, English was one of the first things that made them America, that the horrible social conditions that they were living under.
But you, in this book, suggest that whether people knew the word hip or not, some people were hip and some people were not. Can't we say that people were always hip throughout history, that maybe Socrates was hip?
In the sense of being aware and knowing and with it, you know, sure, there's that. But the kind of thing that we call hip, I think, begins in that meeting of the African and European on this soil, inventing identities for themselves in each other's presence.
And since music is often connected, in fact, I'm not sure whether there isn't always some kind of a soundtrack here, a musical soundtrack, Is that part of it, that synthesis that occurs between European traditions and African traditions?
There is. And there's a great Brian Eno quote that I use in the book. He says, you know what a nerd is? That's someone who doesn't have enough Africa in him or her. And you know why music is so important? It's because that's the conduit that we've let the Africa in through. So that's always been the case. And it's interesting, you know, the stories that Americans tell in their history classes about race are all about conflict and separation. The stories we tell in our pop culture, which is what we invent to tell stories about ourselves, are kind of a fluidity and mixture. The first pop culture in America is really the blackface minstrel show of the 19th century, which is literally white people trying on being black.
And trying to be hip?
Not necessarily, because there's an element of parody and ridicule in it. So I don't think it's entirely the admiring thing that hip is. But that's certainly an element in it as well.
Well, when George Carlin makes the joke about two kids going into a room for a weekend, an Irish kid and a black kid, he says the black kid never comes out saying, "Gee, Willikers," but the white kid comes out saying, "Hey, man, what's happening?"
That's right. There is borrowing back and forth, but it's asymmetric. It's not the same on both sides.
In other words, whites are more likely to borrow or even steal?
Borrow, steal, rip off, exploit, use it for their own ends, but also to add to it, enrich it. And I think it's a loop that goes back and forth.
Well, when I think of hip in more modern terms, I think of people like Miles Davis and Dizzy Gillespie, two people who could be called hip, but who had very little in common other than they played the same instrument.
And Dizzy, I think, mentored Miles at a certain point early in their career.
Well, he was just before Miles and was a better trumpeter initially. But their personalities are so different. So what makes both of them hip when they are so different?
Well, there are ways that they're different. And Dizzy had a better sense of being an entertainer, that was the job one had to do to please the audience. But
would we have called Louis Armstrong hip as well?
I do, yes, absolutely. But I think Dizzy, Miles, and Armstrong, besides all sharing the trumpet, were really intellectually curious, both of them. They were great thinkers, and they were curious about these cultures beyond their own. You know, you could have sat down with Miles and talked about modern painting or poetry or literature. Gillespie maybe was the first globalist culturally.
But you also say that Walt Whitman was undeniably hip, and you also include Thoreau, Melville, Emerson. Now, I'm sure none of them would have even have heard the word hip during their lifetimes. What made them hip?
And their jazz collections were terrible. They were just holes in their hole. They had no Monk records, none of them. I think we're safe there. But I think the four of those who did their major works between 1850 and 1855 laid down a lot of the principles that become hip. Maybe they're pre-hip or proto-hip, but you know, once you start using too many prefixes, it gets complicated. But they certainly cherished the individual over the society. They liked low culture rather than high culture. Whitman had this idea of synthesizing poles. He said, "I'm not the poet of white or black. I'm the poet of both."
But he also wrote homoerotic poetry. Is that part of hipness for some people?
There's absolutely a line. Gays and lesbians are so important to every stage of hip.
Mm-hmm. He also praised the sensual power of the news. So that's another thing? Is sensuality a part of all of this?
They did. Actually, that's true of all four of them, I think. That sense that what made us are these kind of stilling of time to explore the sensual.
Now, in the case of Miles Davis, he grew up in an upper middle class family, so we can't say that you have to be a total outsider to be hip.
That's right. Miles' father was a dentist and a nationalist and a Garveyite. Very interesting character. No, absolutely. Do you have to suffer to sing the blues? I don't think you do. It involves that kind of enlightenment, but just having patrician parochial knowledge will never get you to the front of the hip parade.
Hip parade, that's very good. John Leland is a reporter for the New York Times, former editor-in-chief of Details, was an original columnist at Spin magazine. His book is called Hip, The History. It is published by Echo. This is WNYC 93.9 AM 820. We're online at WNYC.org. You write, hip does not happen just anywhere. It requires population density so that people rub against each other and so that the misfits, dissidents, and outcasts can find each other. So there are no hip farmers? There are no hip hillbillies?
Well, if you are the weirdo in a small town, you're just the weirdo. If you then gravitate to the city, as the weirdos in small towns do, you become part of this creative community, and you're bumping up against people who have other weirdnesses, and your weirdness might be different from mine, and we get together, and I steal a little bit from you, and you steal a little bit from me, and we both steal a little bit from the guys that don't speak English down the block. You know, then you get something creative. If you're all alone, you know, you might have a blues to sing, but it's not a hip one.
Well, is there much of a distinction between someone who's hip and someone who's a bohemian? I know that Norman Mailer tried to make that distinction with his famous essay, The White Negro. But do you see much of a difference?
No, just being a bohemian doesn't necessarily make you hip. I don't think so. You can be sort of a stupid and clueless and be a bohemian. So I think that culture would have its hip, it's truly hit people as well.
Well, women are often not clueless or stupid, and yet they're conspicuously missing from this book. You address the issue in one of your chapters, Where the Lady's At. Why have so few women made it into the annals of coolness, although quite a few have been bohemians?
You know, we all know from our lives that the women we know are hipper than the men we know. They, you know, they dance better and they're a little bit cooler. They have a better sense of what's going on in the minds of the people that are across the table from them. But, you know, men have used hip kind of to erase women from this story, and have, you know, an example would be the Beat Generation. The women of the Beat Generation were as talented, maybe as ambitious as the men around them. But hip is kind of used to keep them down. You speak up, oh, come on, that's uncool talking about that. And what's cool then is the men leaving these women with their babies to raise them up.
Mm-hmm. So if a woman is hip, she might be called irresponsible.
Yeah, I think we're getting to a point where that double standard is not quite as oppressive as it might have been, but it would be Pollyannish for me to say that double standard isn't there anymore.
Let's get back to the borrowing, because someone like Elvis Presley comes along at a certain point and has a hit record with a blues song that he takes credit for, even though it's written by Arthur Crudup. Is in his borrowing, does he become hip, or does he become some kind of a hybrid hip?
Hip is always hybrid. That's what we love about it. I mean, I think it's to look at Elvis as just this white boy who stole the blues, doesn't take into account what Elvis added to it, how he changed it, even if just by accident.
Because he was fond of Richard Nixon and J. Edgar Hoover, two people I normally don't associate with hip people.
I think that Elvis as a process is important to hip. Elvis as an actual person, very complicated, a lot of holes in that character.
What about the more recent versions of Elvis? Let's say, well, we have a number of rappers. We go from Vanilla Ice to Eminem. Is Eminem hip and Vanilla Ice not hip?
Well, what was Vanilla Ice? Vanilla Ice was a guy who was popular because he was white, because there wasn't place for African Americans to have that success that he had. Eminem is a different person. The people that like Eminem like African American rappers as well. Eminem is just an interesting character.
You write that Terry Southern and Lenny Bruce ridiculed the hypocrisy of the ruling classes. Richard Pryor, like Mark Twain, humbled audiences by making them try on the humanity of the despised. So, and they're all hip for that. How far do you go? Do you think Michael Moore is hip because he does similar things now?
I find that there's a lack of empathy in Michael Moore, that he's not trying to understand the other guy's point of view. And for that reason, Michael Moore might be a very talented filmmaker. I'm not really here to discuss that, but I don't look at Michael Moore as being terribly hip.
Now, aren't you the person who broke the story about the very unhip, by all accounts, Milli Vanilli, the lip-syncing phonies?
I love to work in different worlds. Around the time I published this book, I wrote a page one story for the New York Times on Lawrence Welk. I was comfortable in that world, I'm comfortable in the hip world, and I love going back and forth.
But would Milli Vanilli have been more hip if they hadn't been lip-syncing, if they hadn't just been created by somebody else, if they were actually doing that stuff because they had created it?
Milli Vanilli were two guys with good hair who could dance a little bit and were mouthpieces for a German producer named Frank Farian. We would have to start afresh and probably build them from the DNA to get something hip out of them.
Is it as easy to be hip now as it was in the 40s, 50s?
I think that I hate golden ageism. I hate the idea that, oh, things were hip when I was young, or my father was young, or his father was young, and now it's just a bunch of sellouts wandering around Williamsburg wearing the same pants. The arguments that are used against hip have been that it's over now, have been used since the 1920s. Floyd Dell, who was one of the Greenwich Village Bohemians before the war, said, you know, it's commercialized now. He said, you know, the American middle class has come to the end of its Puritan stage and is looking for a way to spend its war profits. And bohemianism showed them a way to, they're looking to Bohemia to show them how to spend that money.
I know. I've read over the years accounts of the Greenwich Village be just going to the dogs again and again by people who felt that this new group of people who are coming in from the outer boroughs were destroying it, or the wealthy people who are buying the homes. And yet, in most people's minds, Greenwich Village still remains hip, doesn't it?
Yeah, or if it's not hip in your mind, get out of there. Go someplace else. Go to the next one.
But you actually do identify a number of times of hip convergences. We were talking about Ralph Waldo Emerson, Henry David Thoreau, Walt Whitman, Herman Melville is another one. They were in the first group in the mid-19th century. And then you say the 1910s and 20s were the birth of the counterculture here.
Right.
And that's Greenwich Village.
That's the Bohemians of Greenwich Village downtown, Harlem Renaissance uptown, and the Lost Generation in Paris.
And then the next one is the one that comes with modern jazz?
Yeah, that's the convergence of the beats and the beat generation and the bebop musicians after the Second World War.
And then we have the 70s is a hip period. The 70s strikes many people as kind of like the... I would think that they would think the Beatles might have been a hip period, but not the 70s.
Well, I look at the best element... The 60s built on the best elements of the 50s. I go to the 70s next because I think that what emerged in the 70s, this what I call do-it-yourself or DIY culture, hip-hop, punk rock, graffiti, independent film, fanzines, breakdancing, all those were kind of a refutation of the culture that came beforehand.
Have we ever had a hip politician?
I think we probably have. The closest you can think of is Cicalina, the Italian porn star who ran for parliament in Italy.
But not George W. Bush or John Kerry.
The hipster in this campaign is clearly John Stewart, don't you think?
Bill Clinton, some people might say, had certain hip elements.
Bill Clinton was probably a fun guy to be with if you could get him to stop talking politics.
John Leland's latest book. Is this your first book?
It is my first.
Yeah, well, so it's his latest and his first. It's called Hip, the History, published by Echo. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, thanks a lot, Leonard.